Tres Teves, Sunday the 16th of December, Dayan Yehoshua Posen. Hilchas Yerusha. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored, Lichvod Simchas Hanasuim of Pini Shtimla and Leah Hammond. Mazel Tov.
Morning. There's a very interesting Medrash Rabba in Parshas Toldos, Medrash Tes. Om Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simoin, Avraham Tova Zikna, says the Medrash. Avraham Avinu requested the concept of aging. Omar lefono ribeino ilomim. Adam uvenoi nichnasim lemakim. Ve'ein adam yedia lemi mechabed. Until that stage, prior to Avraham Avinu's request, if a person, two people, a father and son, entered into a room, there was no concept of aging, and as such, a father and son looked potentially identical, or at least identical in age. And says the Medrash, Avraham said, we don't know who to be mechabot, who's the father, who's the son. Mitoich sh'ato ma'atshe bezikno, if you give, which is an interesting loshon, ma'atshe ma'atora, if you give the crown of aging, then adam yedea lemi mechabot, then a person will know whom to give the relevant kovod. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, chayecha dovo tov tovato. You've asked for a good thing, I agree with the concept. And this concept will begin with yourself. From the beginning of the Torah until Avraham Avinu, we do not find the concept of a person getting old. And when Avraham asked for this request, so all of a sudden the concept of aging, of a physical person being visibly older, as we find in the Pasuk, Avraham Zokin Baba Yom. That's the first matana or keli that's mentioned in the Medrash. Says the Medrash, Yitzchak Tava Yisturin. Yitzchak Avinu requested the concept of Yisturin, which is a debate exactly what that means, because prior to Yitzchak there are various different troubles that I'm finding in the Torah. Omar lefono Rebbeinu Kol Olamim. Adam meis b'lo Yisturin, midas hadin mitucha kenegdoi. If a person dies without any Yisurin, and all of a sudden he has to comes the day of judgment, he has a lot to reckon with. Mitzrich she'atam maybe all of Yisurin, ein midas hadin mitzucha kenegdoi. If a person goes through various Yisurin in their lifetime, it can soften the blow when it comes to Yom Hadin. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, chayecha dzava tzeyu tzavatsa m'mcha ani masul. It's a good thing which you requested, and I'm going to begin it with yourself. Mitzchilas ha'sefer v'ad kan ein k'siv Yisurin. From the beginning of the Torah to the Yitzchak, we don't find Yisurin. Chimun shomad Yitzchak nosan Yisurin, as the apostle says, "Ihi ki zokin Yitzchak v'tichenu, v'tichenu Yaakov tovi v'tichenu." So Yitzchak became blind. Yitzchak went through various Yisurin, and that's what we find. Says the Medrash further, and this is the point which I like to speak about today. This week's parasha, Yaakov tova es achoyi. Yaakov requested sickness. Primarily sickness prior to Petira. Omar lefono Rebbeinu Elomim. Adam meis b'lo choli ve'enoi miyashiv ben bonov. If a person's nifta without any warning of the coming of days, then he doesn't have an opportunity or chance to sort things out between his children. V'toshu chole shnayim eshleisha yomim hu miyashiv ben bonov. If he gets 2-3 days, which doesn't seem very much, but if he gets 2-3 days, he has a chance to be masada things. Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu chayecha dovo tzev tzavatsa m'chohu masl. It's a good thing you're asking for, and it will begin with you. As the Pasuk says in Nesi's Parasha, Ayyema le'yosef hinei avicha chayle. And the Medrash carries on. Michtav Eliyahu explains that these three various different kelim, which were given to the world as b'schus ovos, each one was given b'schus the particular midah, the particular strength of those relevant others. Avraham Avinu was amud ha-chesed. Avraham Avinu was amud ha-chesed. And when you want to do chesed to people, you need to recognize who they are. Now that doesn't mean to say that faket, choshev people, you give gevaldig achnosas orchim, and people who the public might perceive as less choshev, you're not so welcoming. But what it means is, if you don't understand who you're dealing with, you can't necessarily give them the appropriate cover that they need. So Avraham Avinu was somebody whose whole amud was chesed, and yet he said, two people come into the room, I don't know who to be mechabed more, the father or the son, because I don't know who's the father, who's the son. So if you can give a way of differentiating between them, I can treat each person appropriately as it's fitting to them. Yitzchak was din, amud hadin. And as such, as amud hadin, he was constantly thinking Yom HaMisa. He was constantly thinking about Yom HaDin. And therefore he says, if a person turns around in their lifetime and has no wake-up call at all during their life, then Achamev Esin, they get in for a big shock, because Yitzchak was always thinking about Din. So Yitzchak says, if a person can be given different jolts, different wake-ups during the course of their life, the Gemara says, Yifashish HaMaisav, a person who receives a wake-up call, the first thing you're meant to do is check whether there's a particular area where I need to be doing Epes HaTikun. And therefore he davened that person should have Yisurin Mechayov in order to give them an opportunity to do tshuva. Yaakov Avinu was Amud HaEmes. Amud HaEmes, and Mr. Elio says that it's impossible to do, to have proper shalom if one doesn't have a concept of Emes. If a person doesn't have clarity in thought, then it's very, very difficult to make shalom between parties. And since Yaakov had such an emphasis on Emes, he had such an interest that there should be shalom between the Mishpacha, and if there isn't shalom between the Mishpacha, then there's a price to pay. And as such, he requested this concept that there should be a warning prior to the end that a person should have an opportunity to get his house in order that there should be shalom in the Mishpacha. So that's the concept I'd like to speak about in the little bit of time that we have here today. Now, on previous occasions, I think there have been a number of different opportunities when we've gone through Hilchos Yerusha before, and I don't really want to go through Hilchos Yerusha now, even though the title, you know, Dudi calls you up, and you tell him, you know, this small snippet what's well down. So I apologize, it was a mechach tor, so anyone who thought they were going to leave it with a concise understanding of Hilchos Yerusha, we've covered that before. I really want to point out this concept of Yaakov Avinu's Ha'ora, and how it maybe comes to life in today's age. This concept of a person stopping to think about what's going to happen, Achamev Esrim, I would humbly suggest today we need more than 2 or 3 days before Shas HaPtira to give thought to it. Right? And often at that stage there's not a whole lot that a person can necessarily do. And I therefore wanted to point out a number of different areas, mamish just as Misholim, because there are many different examples one could give. I want to pick out a couple of areas where if people would have their eyes open to and would be aware and think about it at a time when they're healthy and well, then potentially they could put things in place which would at least increase the likelihood of there being shalom. Not necessarily guarantee it, but let's call it damage limitation, right? The first is the most basic, which we've covered here before, but it's worth mentioning again. First of all, mamish start at alef beis. If a person is nifta without writing any will or any tzavah whatsoever, without writing anything, the Torah says that there's a hilchus yerusha, the yerushim who inherit al pidin, and those yerushim who inherit al pidin might not be the same people who legally would inherit. And the Rashba says in such a case we don't apply din etzmachus etzinah because im kain batalta kol din etzirah. So start at the most basic. If a person's nifta without any children. Now the halacha is that even though legally a wife might have certain rights, and halachically as well a wife is entitled to be supported through her ksuba until either she's nifta or she gets remarried, but that's support, that's not yerusha. She will not yarshim the assets. So if a person is nifta without children, then his next of kin would go up to his father. If his father is no longer alive, then it will go down to his brothers if he has brothers. If he doesn't have brothers, then if he has a sister, if he doesn't have any siblings whatsoever, then it goes up the next generation and then back down. If a person has children, boys and girls, then the sons inherit and the girls do not inherit. There are certain halachas, and a daughter might inherit, not within Yerusha, but she's entitled to a certain amount of support. Let's not get, as I said, we're not getting bogged down in Hilchos Yerusha now, you know, mamish in the protipotim. If a person has no sons and only daughters, we know from Bnei Selofcha, then the daughters inherit. And so on and so on. Now these are the particular areas that the chidushim arise. First of all, the concept that a wife does not inherit, minadin. Now, having said that, there are various circumstances which might make that less relevant. So, for example, if a marital home is purchased in joint tenancy, legally, we discussed this, I think, before, legally joint tenancy means, now probably if I just ask for a show of hands, most of you probably won't know if your home is in joint tenancy or tenancy in common. But joint tenancy means that the home is owned by both of the tenants, if it's husband and wife, by the husband and wife, in such a manner that they both, so to speak, own it 100%, which means if one of them is nifta, automatically the other one is left holding the whole house, and it's got nothing to do with Yerusha, it's got nothing, you don't have to wait till probate, it's got nothing to do with inheritance at all. Legally, whoever the surviving spouse owns the entire property. So that particular issue of the marital home, which for a lot of people is the bulk of their estate, you know, is often irrelevant of Hilchos Yerusha at that stage between the husband and wife, because often if it's held in joint tenancy, it will automatically pass. I can't tell you whether all poskim would agree with that, but Yerushim would have a hard time being motzi from the almona under those circumstances. However, a person might have other assets, and when he's nifta, if he's nifta without writing any tzavah at all, he has to realize that his Yerushim, who are his sons, if he has sons, his Yerushim will inherit it, and so to speak, they will have an obligation to support his almona. And that can sometimes get tricky. That can get especially tricky in a second marriage. In a second marriage where those children are not necessarily the children of the almona, right? And sometimes they might resent the fact that they're being held up getting their Yerusha because of their father's second, third, fourth, whatever wife it is, then that can be an issue, and many machleksim have happened over these scenarios. If a person's nifta without any savar at all, I once received a call from a shiva, from a Talmud Chacham, who just got up from sitting shiva. He hasn't yet. He's actually about to get up from sitting shiva for his mother. His father had been nifta many years before and left everything to his father. His father left everything to his mother, and his mother was nifta relatively suddenly in her 70s. And he was sitting shiva with his brother, with his sisters, and he called up and said, the maaseh, his mother didn't write tzavah. And what's the halacha? So I said, what do you mean, what's the halacha? You know the halacha, you're Talmud Chacham. You know the halacha, it's a pasuk in it, you know. What's the shaila? So he says, yeah, but, you know, so what's meant to happen now? So I said to him, let me ask you a question. If your mother would have realized by not writing a tzavah or not writing a will, everything would go to her boys and nothing would go to her girls, what would she have done? Would she have been okay with that? He said, no, no way. She would have wanted everything divided equally. I said, so if you know that, you can be pretty sure your sisters know that. Right? So in their mind, halachically, it belongs to you. Completely. No chiv whatsoever. So now it really boils down to a simple question. How important is it to you that your sisters come to your simchas? That's really what we're talking about here. Because halachically, it's yours. But in their mind, you're getting out on a technicality. It's a technicality. And their mind is, this is geneva. They will not see it any other way. Any penny you give them less than an equal share in their mind is going to be geneva. And therefore that's the question you have to ask yourself. Now this particular case had a very interesting twist on it. Now, I might have mentioned this before, I apologize if any of this is chazora for us, but it's kedai to chazora. This particular case had a very interesting shaila because this clay kodesh had already made a number of chasnas and was heavily in debt. He was heavily in debt in Eretz Yisrael. And he asked, answer shaila. Am I allowed to gift to my sisters, right? Even assuming that my brother and I sit down and we talk about it and we decide this is the right thing to do. I'm not talking about a huge estate here. Am I allowed to gift to my sisters an equal share, which is really my money, at the expense of my creditors, who this is their one shot of getting paid in the near immediate future, apart from the little tashlumin that I'm making to them? Do I b'chlal have such a schus to do that? It's b'chlal, not poshut. Alpi didn't. The moment a person inherits it, he owes money, he's got to pay his creditors. My sisters will never understand that. That doesn't make a difference. So that is the nuts and bolts of the particular scenario. If a person doesn't write a tzavah at all, then the bonim and yarshin, first of all, has ramifications as far as the wife is concerned, because even though she's entitled to be supported, then you have stories like sons trying to tell the mother that she doesn't really need such a big house. Right? Now, any negias at all, maybe you can move into a little apartment somewhere out, cheap, and we can, you know, cash in on the house. And then do you need to take, your expenses are very high, and do you need to travel as much? And it becomes a whole halachilich, where basically the sons in their eyes see their mother eating up their estate. Right? Now, very often, simple people with not huge estates, there can be nothing left by the time we get to the bonim, because the wife, depending how many years between the tira of the husband and the wife, you know, to support her, etc. And that's not talking about if a person becomes sick and needs help and care and assistance, etc., etc. So the situation, the scenario whereby the Yershim own it, they're the Bailim on it, and the Almon is entitled to support, can have its trials.
What's the psak in the case of the Chovis?
He's got Chovis.
The Chovis come first.
He's Chai. He owes the money. No. Not Chovis of the Nifta. Chovis of the Yershim.
The son's chovis.
There wasn't even mitzvah carrying a mess. There was nothing mentioned. The fact that one knows one's mother would have wanted it, it's a technicality. And that's exactly what we're trying to point out. We're not blaming anyone here, but this is a massive machlekes in the making, which could so easily have been solved if somebody would have stopped to think about what's meant to happen. And often I get the answer, and this is particularly, forgive me for saying, annoying. Often I get the answer, I know my kids, they'll do the right thing. Why it's annoying is because it's completely misunderstanding the halacha. This is not, there is no right thing. What's the right thing? This boy is calling up, boy, he's older than me and a bigger Talmud Chacham. He's calling up and he's asking, what am I meant to do now? The right thing up here, halacha, he yarshens it. In fact, just to throw another curveball, Pashtos, if he's mapped on Maisik Sofim, he has a chiv to take stock on the whole lot before he divides it between his sisters. Because it's his, it's mamish his. I mean, it's automatically his. Mimele, the Torah makes it his. It's not that he even has to do any kinyan. It belongs to him. It's in his estate. If he wants to give anything to his sisters now, it's a gift. It's a gift. And therefore, Maisik Sofim, if not Maisik Sofim, but Balei Chovos, he's got an asset all of a sudden. He's got debts he needs to pay. I want to give a matzono to my sister. Imagine you say like this. A person has money, and his Balei Chovos come knocking on his door, and he says, my sister's unreasonable. And because she's unreasonable, if I don't give her £1 million, she's going to be bogus, and therefore I can't pay off the chayv because I need to make my sister happy. Would there be any other money you could do that? What do you mean? Does she have a claim? Minadin? Minad anything? She's got no claim. So because she is going to be bogus, because she doesn't understand halacha, that means the Baal chayv shouldn't get paid?
Who has to get paid first, the Baal chayv or the Maisa?
Okay, it depends on person's halacha with Maisa. The Pashas is the Baal chayv. Because Maisa is on profits, which you have. This is not profit. You owe the money out. Let's.
If he's paying chovas, he wouldn't have to take masik sofim.
I don't want to get involved with masik sofim now. Let me get back to it, because it depends on a number of different factors. Al kaponim.
So there's two parts. One chovas panatha, not chovtunatha, both.
That's again the shayin and hilchos chovas, who gets paid in priority. Again, let's not get too diverted. There are people who sit down and actually think about what they want to do. They want to think about what they want to do with their entourage, Savor, and wanted to distribute to their children. And there's a Gemara which tells us from the parashas which we learned from Yosef, and Yaakov loved Yosef more, so he gave him Ksenis Pasim, and the rest of the machlekes that caused Bein Achim is history. And as such, the halacha pasens, the shulchan pasens, that a person distributing between their children should distribute equally. Between the children. Interestingly, the halacha has brought legabe tzavor more than mechaim. More than, forget, Yosef was matzon and mechaim gave to his children, and the halacha has brought legabe Yerusha. But the question legabe distributing equally.
Is that including the girls?
Oh, so we'll come to the girls in a second. But the Shulchan Aruch is speaking about initially the boys. Between the boys, one should distribute equally between the boys. Now, Bechor obviously gets Pishnaim, that's it in Torah. I was once called to a case where a couple, Baruch Hashem, had Arichas Yomim, and in their latter years, their youngest child was, in their eyes, a far better child than the other children. A far better child. Why? Because he used to visit them, he used to take them out for coffee, he used to take them for walks, his children lived in their house, he was a good child. And the other children popped in for a token, you know, oh, you're right, yes, good, and that was it. And as such, the parents, when they sat down to do a din v'cheshbon, decided that this second, youngest child, wasn't second, this youngest child, magia loy, you know, he deserves. And I'm not sure how much of it was he deserves or the others don't. Yesh lachter. And therefore, as such, in the Yerusha, this youngest child got double what all his siblings got.
Was it
b'chor then? There was no b'chor. There was no b'chor. There was, no, I'm saying there was no b'chor. Whatever. Olds was a girl. I'm trying to keep it vague, because in case anyone thinks they know the people here. Whatever. And if you know anyone where these figures match, then I've changed the details. But it could be true as well. Al-Kaponim, what happened was, the morning after the Shiva, the children wanted to know Oshteit, right? Tachas. Oshteit in the Tzavah. And at that stage when the Tzavah was read, the other children were absolutely livid. When I say livid, they cut off all connection from them and their children with their mother. Because the parents have connived together to cut them out, not cut them out, but treat them differently, treat them as sub-children over the jewel in the crown. And as such, they were brogus, literally brogus. At the father's matzeva, and I have to say this carefully in case anyone thinks, like I say, whoever, at the father's matzeva, they did not come. To the father's matzeva. And our mona came to me. I had nothing to do with the tzavo. The mona came to me with tainas about how could her children behave in such a way. Never, she's an almona, she's left as an almona, and as if it's not bad enough, losing her life partner after many, many decades, now her children are breakers. And how can such a thing happen? And I asked her a question which maybe with hindsight wasn't fair to ask. I mean, it was a fair question, but maybe not correct to ask. And I asked, what did you think was going to happen? What was the machshava? What was the intention? Did you think the other siblings were going to say, you know what, Dad was right. We weren't good enough kids. Let's make sure we're good enough kids when it comes to Mum. But was that the machshava? Or was the machshava exactly what's happened here? Now, very nice. This father, he's had his day. He's had his moments when he can give his patch and give his message across. And Nebuch, his almana, is actually the one left behind picking up the pieces. And she's the one, Nebuch, with the Taurus. And always, if advising people writing in Tzavor, where sometimes some children need it more than others, and you should know, very often it's the ones who need it the least who make the biggest fuss. Right? It's a fallacy that some need it, some don't need it, so we give more to one, and they're going to understand. They do not understand. There is something unique about a Tzavor. That a Tzavor is the last message from the parents. It's written in stone. This is what the father thought about the children. This is what the mother thought about the children. It's there forevermore as the final word. And the damage it causes can go on. Mamish v'dayus. There can be descendants who don't even know why they don't speak to their cousins or second cousins, whatever it is. They know there was something that happened way back. They don't know what it is. People don't even remember anymore what it was. And what it was someone going out on a bang. Right? Someone literally making a point. Now, if there is a discrepancy between children, which there normally will be, then fine, give a matzono mechaim. Mechaim, give a matzono to one of the children who needs extra help. No one has to know about it, it doesn't need to be documented, it can be kept quiet. But this concept of it being in their actual tzavor, where there's a differentiation between them, is where things go wrong. It's where it causes incredible tzar in the mishpacha. If that's the intention to cause incredible tzar, b'seder, so know what you're dealing with. You know, ultimately, if somebody comes and that's what they want to do, no one can do anything about it. But be aware of what you're talking about. Be aware of the price that potentially is going to have to be paid. Another area where things go very wrong is you find scenarios, I'm going to be intentionally vague, but you find scenarios where people have properties or companies in different children's names. And sometimes there's no particular cheshbon as to which is in which child's name, etc. Because sometimes in the person's mind, in the parent's mind, he might look at this all, so to speak, all under his thumb. And the trouble is, Achameva Esun, if there's a major discrepancy between these companies or between these properties, and the question arises, what was really the intent? Was it really the intent that each child, whatever's in their name, is theirs? Or was the intention that one day I'm going to do a reckoning between it all, but at the moment it's for the kids, almost like it's in a trust, discretionary trust, which it isn't. And the trouble is, at that stage, the Yerushim wake up and they find their own companies, they might have signed tax returns over the years, they might have actually seen those tax returns, you know. At that stage, they turn around and they give, you know, all of a sudden one's holding a big property, one's holding a small property, one's holding a big company, one's holding a small company. And the ones holding small companies turn around to their siblings and say, of course, this was all daddy's. Right? And he meant, therefore, that it should be divided equally. And the other ones say, how do I know? How do I know? Now, interestingly, in fact, and I don't have time to explain this properly, Api Alocha, because this is a separate shiur in itself, but if a person has an English will, and in the English will they say everything should be divided equally between their children. Let's say the almana has been taken care of, etc. Everything should be divided equally between their children. And they don't have a halachic will, which we can't go into now. We've covered that before. We can maybe cover that again. The English will, according to many poskim, doesn't work at all, halachically. But even according to those poskim that say it works because of the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'mes, which older Pada Zatzal explains in Cheshev Eifed, works along the lines of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'mes requires that your mashlish, that you hand over your estate to a third party with specific instructions at the time of handing over, achamev esu, I want you to give it to my daughters, my sons, etc., etc. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'mes is only if instructions given with the handing over. So as for Padua, if a person writes an English will, where an executor is appointed with legal power over the whole estate, it's as if you physically picked up everything and handed it to the executor, and therefore the executor has power over, and therefore there's mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'mes to distribute it to the named beneficiaries in the said will. Halachically, there are many places can hold it doesn't work for multiple reasons. The executor doesn't come the executor until Shas Ptira, and you haven't actually physically handed over anything, and multiple reasons. But let's even go with Rapadva, that it works. Right? And by the way, just as an MB, those people who say, I was happy to allow in Rapadva when it came to Isha Shailas and other Shailas, I'm happy to allow when it comes to this, are also making a mistake. Because if the Yerushim happen to be Muchzuk, and they go to Bezin, they might well be able to tie a Kimli against that. And I'm speaking a little bit quick on it, but let me get to the point I want to bring out. In such a scenario, when a person's nifta and their properties or assets not in his name, but which he might consider his, but they're not in his name, the executor of the will has no legal power whatsoever over those assets, because there's nothing to show it was his. So even Rapatva's mahalach of mitzvah l'kayim will not apply on those assets at all. So those assets will either be left in the people whosever's names they are, or the bonim will say they've yashrut it midin teri, because the will doesn't have any legs whatsoever. Again, the point of this isn't that you come at understanding these particular points 100% clear, and you're able to apply them. It's more that you should recognize the issues that are at hand. I want to just finish off. Again, Mesholim, we could go through many for a while, but I do want to finish off with quite a well-known vort in this week's parasha, but maybe apply it slightly differently. Possibly in this week's parasha tells us, for any saw Kovdu Mezoikin, like we said, Yaakov became old and his vision became blurred. So Ephraim and Menashe come to Yaakov. I never thought I'd get to see your face. Now I get to see even your children. Yankel Galinsky, quite a well-known vort, spoke at the bar mitzvah of his great-grandchildren in Bnei Brak. And he said there that we find the way the world is created, we find in Bereshis Perek Beis, the whole world had been created. And all the plants and trees and crops, everything was ready to grow, but nothing yet grew. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu hadn't yet brought rain. And man hadn't yet worked on the ground. Says Rashi, a famous Rashi. I'll say outside, so I want to get to the vault. Rashi tells us that you know what the reason is that nothing had grew, because it hadn't yet rained. And why hadn't it yet rained? Because, read the this word. The fisha adam ein lamin es adam ve ein machi betzivos and shogeshomim. וכשבא אדם ויודע שם צורך לעולם, הספלל עליהם ויורדו וצומחו הילונוס ועד השוים. It's Gemara in Chulin Daf Samach. Says Rashi, Adam Rishon needed to be in the world, recognized that rain was needed, daven for rain, and then everything began. The whole Bria had been created with everything ready, all the potential, but the potential couldn't be realized until Adam had davened. Once Adam had davened, everything could be realized. Says Rabbi Yankel, if you would have asked him, this was Rabbi Yankel Galinsky speaking at the Bar Mitzvah, if you would have asked him all those years ago when he was in Siberia, what he davened for, he would have said, you know what I davened for? I davened for a slice of bread. A piece of bread. That's what I davened for. It was so starving. It was so cold and bitter. People were dropping like flies. At that stage, what I davened for, my hasogas were a piece of bread. And what I davened for was, if I'm not zeicher to have my initial, my primary tefillah answered, then my secondary tefillah is, let me be zeicher at least to Yiddish kfura. At least that, because his friends and colleagues were dropping by the side. They weren't even allowed to bury them. They had to carry on marching to the work and back from the work. So he said, my hasogas, what I davened for that stage, was at least, give me a piece of bread. If I can't have a piece of bread, at least let me have a Yiddish kfura. Said Rabbi Yankel, if you would have asked me then whether I'm davening for my Einiklich or Einiklich in Bnei Brak, Yeshuv Leimut Torah, Achavas Hadas, it was so rochuk from my mind. I never dreamt of such a thing. I never davened for such a thing. Said Rabbi Yankel, if a person davens for something, Kodesh Baruch Hu answers his tefillahs, how lucky is he? But if a person doesn't even daven for something because they don't even dream of such a thing, then we know from the Poskim Bereishis, the way the world is wired is you need to daven. Even when the Shefa is there, ready to be given, if you don't daven for it, if you don't ask for it, then you don't have a schus to get it bichlal. Even if it's Magia Lecho, it doesn't come. Maybe that was what Yaakov Avinu was saying to Yosef. Yaakov Avinu is standing there with Ephraim and Menashe being brought in the room to receive a bracha. He's saying, do you understand? Roi ponecha loi palolti. I never even davened to see your face again. You know, Lailenu, the Mishpachas Neret Yisrael, whose children get captured, and they don't know if they're alive, and they don't know if they're dead. For decades, they go through mamish shivri gehenim. But they can daven, let me see my child again, because they know there's a possibility they might be alive. Yaakov Avinu been told, Yosef was dead. So if Yosef said, I don't need to daven. Yes, he went through the Avedus, and Avedus never went away, and there was no Shechor, we know the Mepharshim. But at the end of the day, he didn't daven to see Yosef, and he certainly didn't daven to see Yosef's children. So when he's standing here on this day, his exclamation of Takot Shmorcho, Akor, V'roi ponecho lo'i polotzi, I never dreamt for such a thing, I never daven for such a thing, look how lucky I am. What I'd like to slightly adapt this is that there is nothing more important to a person than Mishpacha. And there's nothing more important to a person than Sholem and their Mishpacha. And as such, it begs the question, do we ever stop and daven that there should be Sholem in the Mishpacha? Do we ever stop and daven that Achameva Esim, the siblings, will get on in the way that we would like them to get on? And if we don't stop and daven for that, then even if Magia Alonu, but Roi Ponecha Lei Pololti. And I'd say one more vote. If we daven for it on a regular basis, let our children know that we're davening for it on a regular basis. Let our children know how important this is to us, more than almost anything else. Because if they get that message in their lifetime, then hopefully, achamer ve'esim, when we're no longer in a position to give over the directive, that message will be there above and beyond everything else. And when that happens, and I've seen this happen, and there's no guarantees, but I've seen this happen. But when that happens, the children sit down and they don't even want to look at the will, they don't even want to look at the tzavah. It doesn't make a difference. Well, it's done correctly, not done correctly, it doesn't interest any of us. We're dividing all equally. This is what the parents would want. Shalom between the mishpacha and kolt. And so mishlo b'zeichet v'shalom. Shmeich.